Mimi Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
I'm very proud of the job that this group of young people, generally young people, but very smart people, they're doing. They're doing it at my insistence. It would be a lot easier not to do it, but we have to take some of these things apart to find the corruption. We found tremendous corruption.
Legal experts are warning of a constitutional crisis as the Trump administration hints it may ignore a federal judge's ruling, temporarily blocking Elon Musk and his Doge associates from accessing the Treasury Department's payment systems and American sensitive data. Over the weekend, Musk called for the judge to be impeached. Vice President Vance questioned the judge's authority. We'll look at Doge's young so-called engineers who are playing a key role in Musk's overhaul of federal agencies. We'll speak with Wired reporter Victoria Elliott, who's broken major stories on Musk and the young men who comprise his Doge army. Meanwhile, the South African-born billionaire Elon Musk is claiming white South Africans have been victims of racist ownership laws and accused the post-apartheid government of anti-white racism, pushing the Trump administration to cut off all aid Friday until further notice to South Africa. This comes after Musk's father helped arrange a call with the South African president to oppose the land reform law.
I can only imagine that Elon would have said, look, we want to help you, but you have to quit this war on white people in South Africa.
We'll go to South Africa and then to the occupied West Bank as Israel intensifies its military assault, which has displaced 35,000 Palestinians, and Trump doubles down on his plans for Gaza.
I'm committed to buying and owning Gaza.
We'll speak with Dr. Mustafa Barghouti in Ramallah. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The Trump administration's giving hints it may ignore a federal judge's ruling restricting Elon Musk and his associates in Doge, the Department of Government Efficiency, from accessing the Treasury Department's critical payment systems. In his decision, U.S. District Judge Paul Engelmeyer warned about the, quote, disclosure of sensitive and confidential information and the heightened risk that the systems in question will be more vulnerable than before to hacking, unquote. Vice President J.D. Vance responded to the ruling by writing on social media, quote, judges aren't allowed to control the executive's legitimate power, unquote. Elon Musk also called for the judge to be impeached. On Sunday, Democratic Senator Chris Murphy appeared on ABC This Week and warned against what he called the billionaire takeover of the government.
And I think this is the most serious constitutional crisis the country has faced, certainly since Watergate. The president is attempting to seize control of power and for corrupt purposes. The president wants to be able to decide how and where money is spent so that he can reward his political friends, he can punish his political enemies. That is the evisceration of democracy.
In other news about Doge, Elon Musk says he's rehiring 25-year-old Marco Ellis, who resigned after being linked to a deleted social media account that advocated racism and eugenics, among other things, writing, normalize Indian hate. Trump and J.D. Vance had both called for him to be rehired. Donald Trump has repeated his proposal for the United States to take ownership of Gaza, describing Gaza as a, quote, big real estate site. Trump said it would be a, quote, big mistake to let Palestinians stay there. This comes as the State Department's announced a new $7 billion arms sale to Israel, including thousands of bombs and missiles. On Saturday, Israel and Hamas conducted another swap of captives. Hamas released three Israeli men who'd been held hostage since October 7, 2023. Israeli health officials said the freed men were suffering from severe malnutrition. Israel released 183 Palestinians, including at least seven who needed immediate hospital care. This is Ala Alaga, one of the Palestinians released Saturday.
The conditions were very bad. No food, no water, no medicine. We were in a torture center for 24 hours. I spent 40 days handcuffed and blindfolded, and I could not go to the bathroom or anywhere else. There was no food. I entered prison at 100 kilograms and left at 58 kilograms.
In other news from Gaza, Israeli forces have withdrawn from the Netzarim corridor, the key strip of land that bisects Gaza. Meanwhile, a new investigation by 972 magazine and Local Call reveals Israeli forces indiscriminately drop bunker buster bombs on residential buildings in Gaza in an attempt to flood underground tunnels with lethal fumes in order to suffocate Hamas fighters. But 972 reports dozens of these Israeli airstrikes likely endangered or killed hostages as well. In the occupied West Bank, Israel's intensifying its military assault, which has already displaced 35,000 Palestinians. On Saturday, Israeli troops raided the Nur Shams refugee camp, where they killed two women, including one 23-year-old, Sunduz Jamal Jalabi, who was 8 months pregnant. Her husband was critically injured. Palestinian officials said efforts to save her baby failed in part because the Israeli military prevented the couple from being transferred to the hospital. Meanwhile, in Lebanon, an Israeli airstrike killed six people Saturday in the eastern Bekaa region in the latest Israeli violation of the November ceasefire. On Friday, a Trump-appointed judge temporarily blocked the Trump administration's plan to dismantle USAID and lay off thousands of workers. The judge's ruling came hours after government workers took down USAID signage from the agency's headquarters. Internal documents suggest the Trump administration's planning to cut the size of USAID staff from about 10,000 to under 300. Global aid organizations are warning the dismantling of the aid agency could impact millions of the world's most vulnerable people. The United Nations AIDS Agency warned Friday that more than 6 million people could die from HIV and AIDS over the next 4 years if PEPFAR, the president's emergency plan for AIDS relief, is not reauthorized.
As UNAIDS, we estimate that if PEPFAR wasn't reauthorized between 2025 and 2029 and other resources were not found for the HIV response, there would be a 400% increase in AIDS death. That's 6.3 million people, 6.3 million AIDS-related deaths that will occur in future.
PEPFAR was founded by former President George W. Bush. The National Institutes of Health has announced plans to slash about $4 billion in funding for biomedical research, a move that could have an immediate impact on research at universities, medical schools, and research hospitals. The AAMC, the Association of American Medical Colleges, criticized NIH's decision, saying it will, quote, diminish the nation's research capacity, slowing scientific progress, and depriving patients, families, and communities across the country of new treatments, diagnostics, and preventative interventions, unquote. Cutting NIH funding was a part of the Project 2025 playbook. The Trump administration's effectively shut down the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. The Bureau's acting director, Russell Vogt, who was the architect of Project 2025, has closed the Bureau's office for the next week and has ordered staff to halt nearly all work. Vogt's move came after Elon Musk wrote a message Friday on X that said, CFPB RIP, along with an emoji of a tombstone. Since its formation in 2011, the Bureau has helped return about $21 billion to consumers. But the agency's long been criticized by Republicans and big business interests. In other economic news, Trump's announced he will soon impose 25% tariffs on all steel and aluminum imports. Meanwhile, retaliatory Chinese tariffs on a number of U.S. products have taken effect today as a global trade war heats up. A federal judge in New Mexico has temporarily blocked the U.S. government from sending three Venezuelan men in immigration detention to Guantanamo. The Center for Constitutional Rights had sought an emergency order to protect the three men over the weekend. Secretary of Homeland Security Kristi Noem visited the U.S. Navy base in Cuba days after the first detained immigrants were flown there. In other immigration news, NBC is reporting the Trump administration is moving forward with restarting the detention of migrant families, including those with young children. ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, is reportedly preparing to seek bids from private prison companies to run the facilities. President Trump's order to freeze on foreign aid to South Africa, claiming South Africa's white population is facing unjust racial discrimination. Trump's repeatedly criticized a new land reform law in South Africa, where the country's white minority still owns the vast majority of farmland 30 years after the end of apartheid rule. We'll have more on this story later, and the headlines will go to South Africa. In Tanzania, leaders of Eastern and Southern African regional blocs called for an immediate and unconditional ceasefire in Eastern Congo as they met this weekend for an unprecedented joint summit. This is Veronica Nduva, Secretary General of the East African Community.
The joint summit directed resumption of direct negotiations and dialogue with all state and non-state parties, military and non-military, including the M23.
Also in attendance was Rwandan President Paul Kagame, who's come under mounting pressure over the presence of Rwandan troops in eastern Congo and Rwanda's backing of the M23 fighters, though Kagame continues to deny any involvement. The UN says some 3,000 people were killed in just 1 week of fighting after the M23 fighters seized the key city of Goma in late January. Over 500,000 people have been displaced in eastern Congo in recent weeks, compounding an already severe humanitarian crisis. There have been widespread reports of sexual violence. Sam Nujoma, freedom fighter turned president who led Namibia to independence from apartheid South Africa in 1990, has died at the age of 95. Often referred to as Namibia's founding father, Nujoma was known for his motto, "A united people striving to achieve a common good for all members of the society will always emerge victorious." Ecuador's presidential election will be decided in a runoff April 13th after conservative incumbent President Daniel Noboa and leftist lawyer Luis Gonzalez beat out 14 other candidates, both of them receiving over 44% of the vote. Noboa and Gonzalez previously faced off in a 2023 snap election. Both candidates vowed to crack down on crime. Last year, President Noboa, son of an ultra-rich banana magnate, declared a state of internal armed conflict to more easily deploy the military. Luis Gonzalez, a protege of former President Rafael Correa, has promised to increase social spending. She called for Ecuadorians to unite to defeat Noboa in the second round.
Meses atrás.
Months ago, we called for unity among the parties of the left and the center. We also called on the industry to join us, as well as civil society. I've also called on the parties of the right and all those who want to recover the country to make Ecuador the safest country in Latin America.
In Madrid, leaders of Europe's extreme right parties gathered Saturday at an event organized by Spain's Vox Party called Make Europe Great Again. Attendees railed against immigration and hailed Trump's return to office. Speakers included Italy's Deputy Prime Minister Matteo Salvini, French National Rally Party leader Marine Le Pen, and Hungarian Prime Minister Viktor Orban.
The Trump tornado has changed the world in just a few weeks, and the era has ended. Yesterday, we were their heretics. Today, we are the mainstream.
Meanwhile, in Germany, at least 200,000 protesters rallied in Munich Saturday against the far-right anti-immigrant Alternative for Germany party, known as AfD, which is polling in second place 2 weeks ahead of national elections. Back in Washington, D.C., President Trump has moved to take over the Kennedy Center for the Performing Arts. On Friday, Trump fired numerous board members and said he would become the new chair of the Kennedy Center. Meanwhile, the National Endowment for the Arts has shut down a grant program aimed at underserved groups and communities. The NEA under Trump says it is looking to fund more projects celebrating the 250th anniversary of the United States. On Sunday night, one of the Kennedy board members who was just fired, the acclaimed musician John Batiste, sang the Star Spangled Banner at the start of the Super Bowl with President Trump in attendance. Ahead of the game, the NFL removed the words "end racism" from the end zones. During Kendrick Lamar's halftime performance, one of the dancers unveiled a Sudanese flag and Palestinian flag sewn together. The performer managed to run around the field holding the flag for about 20 seconds. Security guards then tackled the performer, who was arrested. Meanwhile, the state of Louisiana is facing criticism for efforts to remove unhoused people from the streets of New Orleans before the Super Bowl. The Guardian reports the state spent $17.5 million to coerce more than 100 unhoused people to be bused to a remote, unheated warehouse that lacked enough blankets and cots. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Legal experts are warning of a constitutional crisis. As the Trump administration hints it may ignore a federal judge's ruling temporarily blocking Elon Musk and his Doge associates from accessing the Treasury Department's payment systems and sensitive data. Over the weekend, Elon Musk lashed out at Judge Paul Engelmeyer, referring to him on X as a, quote, corrupt judge protecting corruption, calling for Engelmeyer to be impeached. In his ruling, Engelmeyer warned of irreparable harm presented by Doge's access to sensitive information and of the, quote, heightened risk that the systems in question will be more vulnerable than before to hacking, unquote. In response, Vice President J.D. Vance said on X, quote, if a judge tried to tell a general how to conduct a military operation, that would be illegal. If a judge tried to command the attorney general on how to use her discretion as a prosecutor, that's also illegal. Judges aren't allowed to control the executive's legitimate power, said the vice president of the United States, a graduate of Yale Law School, J.D. Vance. Meanwhile, President Trump on Friday said nearly every federal agency in the U.S. government could fall under the scrutiny of Doge. Trump was questioned by Fox News White House correspondent Peter Ducey.
And we're going to be doing more and more of that. We're going to be looking at Department of Education. We're going to be looking at even our military. We're going to be looking at tremendous amounts of money, Peter, being spent on things that bear no relationship to anything and have no value. We're talking about trillions of dollars. It will be, in the end, trillions of dollars being absolutely wasted and perhaps illegally.
Democratic Senator Chris Murphy appeared on ABC this week Sunday and warned against what he called the billionaire takeover of government.
And I think this is the most serious constitutional crisis the country has faced, certainly since Watergate. The president is attempting to seize control of power and for corrupt purposes. The president wants to be able to decide how and where money is spent so that he can reward his political friends. He can punish his political enemies. That is the evisceration of democracy.
This all comes as more details have emerged of Doge's young so-called engineers who are playing a key role in Musk's overhaul of federal agencies, including Edward Korstein. He's 19 years old, a college dropout. He graduated from Rye Country Day High School last June. Other Doge engineers have been identified as 21-year-old Akash Baba, who has been listed as an expert at the Office of Personnel Management and reportedly has been able to access internal databases, 23-year-old Luke Farator, a former intern at Musk SpaceX, 24-year-old Gautier Cole Killian, 25-year-old Gavin Klieger, who described Trump's failed U.S. Attorney General nominee and accused sexual abuser Matt Gaetz as a victim of the deep state, and 22-year-old Ethan Shoutron. Musk said on Friday he would be rehiring 25-year-old Doge staff member Marco Elles, who resigned last week after he was linked to a deleted social media account that advocated racism and eugenics, writing, among other things, "normalize Indian hate." Both Trump and J.D. Vance called for Elles to be rehired. For more, we're joined here in New York by Victoria Elliott, reporter for Wired, covering platforms and power. She and her team have broken several major stories on Elon Musk and Doge. Elliott's recent piece is headlined, "The Recruitment Effort That Helped Build Elon Musk's Doge Army." Welcome back to Democracy Now, or to Democracy Now for the first time. Thank you for joining us. We know you are under the weather, tired for so much reporting on this fire hose of presidential actions. Victoria, what do you think is most important for us to understand of this Doge army? You can refer to them by their names or by their various handles, which are quite amazing.
I mean, I think the most important thing is to note that, you know, what we're really seeing is people coming out of either Musk's companies or companies owned by Peter Thiel, another billionaire who's very close to Musk. He's the chair of Palantir, a big data analytics company that is also a massive defense contractor. And so what I think was really interesting for us when we reported that most recent story is the fact that, you know, these young people were sourcing within these already established networks of people who are very, very technically gifted, probably because they've worked at these companies, but that this is sort of a closed network. And what we've sort of learned being tech reporters in general is that oftentimes people in the tech industry see the press as pretty adversarial. They see government in some ways as sometimes pretty adversarial with overreach and red tape. And so I think what stuck out to me is that although Musk sort of put out this public call on X, it seems that a lot of the people who are part of this effort were people drawn from what he and people who are close to him would consider trusted networks. And in that way, you know, I think this sort of sense that Doge is almost this parallel operation to sort of traditional government operations really feels very salient, particularly when these people have access to really sensitive data that people who are government contractors maybe would not often have, or people who are new hires into government would not often have.
So talk more about who the young people are, like the Rye Country Day graduate from last year. His name, Edward Carstein, he's referred to, he refers to himself as Big Balls. These are the people that the administration is referring to as these efficiency experts. He's the one. Senators aren't allowed now into the Treasury Department to see what's going on. They're stopped by police. But he's right there.
Yeah, I mean, again, I think a lot of these people, you know, if you look at their backgrounds, they're people with really strong technical skills. You know, I think they all have, you know, really some impressive achievements on their resumes. I think Edward Carstein, as you mentioned, is quite young. And our team was able to sort of identify that he was seemed to be associated with a possible DDoS, or distributed denial of service for hire situation. So, you know, that particularly is sketchy. And I think when we're looking at that, even if these people are particularly technically gifted, they may not.
Can you explain what that means for people who are not digitally completely literate?
Sure. So a DDoS thing it is a sort of distributed denial of service. It's a form of attack. So it's when someone comes to your website is flooded with views at such a high rate that it basically shuts your whole website down. It's sort of meant to overwhelm a technical system. And it's a form of cyber attack. And so I think it's one of those things where when we look at that type of instance, you know, even if these young men are very technically gifted, and they very well may be, you know, they do seem to have questionable, some of them seem to have questionable backgrounds. And if they were going through the regular process of you know, doing a security clearance or getting background checked for a government job to access the kind of sensitive data that they would seem to be having access to right now, they may not have actually been given that if they were adhering to the standard protocol that we have set up within the U.S. government for reasons to be able to vet people's background, to be able to ensure that people who are touching this data or can manipulate this data are trustworthy, are, you know, have been sort of vetted. And again, as I've said sort of multiple times, you know, even if these are incredibly technically gifted people who have nothing but the purest of intentions, they've only had access to these systems at best since January 20th. And anyone who started a new job anywhere at any time could tell you that is not enough time to be getting into a system and making substantial changes to
it. And I mean, someone like Marco Ellis, who was the focus this weekend because he was fired when it came out, that now deleted social media account that advocated repealing the Civil Rights Act back to eugenic immigration policy and, quote, said, just for the record, I was racist before it was cool. And he's the one who advocated normalizing Indian hate. The front person advocating for him to be rehired, which he was Vice President J.D. Vance, whose wife, of course, Usha Vance, is Indian American. His children, his three children, Indian American. Victoria.
Yeah, I think that's a distraction. The reality is, you know, I think I think obviously his views would probably, again, if he had been properly background checked, would have come up, would have been something that, you know, might have been flagged in the regular process. And, you know, if he was applying for a regular government job, he might not have been hired. But I think the more critical issue is the fact that whether or not it's Marco Ellis or someone else on the DOGE team, it does seem that this, parallel entity that is DOGE is accessing sensitive data that otherwise would not be available to it. At least from our reporting, we saw that, or it appeared that Marco did at some point have read-write access to the code. And I think this is incredibly important because we've already seen the way that the DOGE effort and the Trump administration has tried to get around paying out funds that have been allocated by Congress for, you know, agencies, for programs that have also been approved by Congress. You know, I think that is the most concerning thing.
In a piece that was headlined, a U.S. Treasury Threat Intelligence Analysis designates DOGE staff as insider threat. Talk about the significance of that, Victoria.
I think it's important just because it acknowledges that at least in some capacity, the experts that the Treasury was working with acknowledged that having people in these systems who were not vetted, who had the ability to apparently read and write code and sort of be within these systems without much oversight, without much training, is an incredible risk.
And we're going to talk in a moment about what's been called the PayPal mafia. But I'd like you to go into Elon Musk. You've written about him extensively as an international far-right leader. Talk about his ties to the far right in Germany, where there was just a mass protest, and how he's used his digital platform.
I mean, he has platformed the leader of the AfD party in Germany in the same way he did with Trump, which is he sort of had an X spaces with her. He has come out very publicly in support of the AfD, you know, the other weekend. And I apologize, I can't remember the day because they're all blurring together. He posted Make Europe Great Again. You know, it's very clear that his ambitions for reshaping politics don't end at U.S. borders. And I think, you know, even before the U.S. elections, we saw a taste of that with how he behaved in Brazil. You know, the Brazilian courts required him to, or required X to take down accounts that they said were associated with their attempted overthrow of a free and fair election. And X refused to do it until the Brazilian government banned the platform. But that resistance that X showed to try and keep up these right-wing accounts and to share the otherwise secret court orders with Congressman Jim Jordan, whose committee then made them public. You know, at the time, many Brazilian scholars and legal experts sort of said that they felt that X's and Musk's behavior was essentially trying to assault their democratic institutions and disobey their duly elected government. And so I think, we've seen tastes of this even before Musk was part of the Trump administration. And I think that, Musk is a global businessman. His interests extend far beyond the U.S. borders. And I think, therefore, his political interests extend beyond the U.S. borders as well.
Let me finally ask you about the difficulty of the challenges of reporting in this time. You have the interim U.S. Attorney for the District of Columbia, Edward R. Martin, threatening to go after people who identify or criticize individuals. Wired is breaking story after story. You are naming names, Vittoria. Are you concerned?
We're just continuing to do the work.